Meeting to order. It is 6:13 on Wednesday, June 10th. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I have a flag over my shoulder if you want to take a look. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Mark, can you take roll call, please?
Sure. Ralph Capiello?
Here.
Robert Hyder?
Here.
Camille Grandy Curtica?
Who's Sharp?
Chris LaRoque?
Here.
Anyalo Malerba III?
Here.
Carl McCluster? Gina McKay?
Present.
Sam Palastro Jr.?
Here.
James Smay?
Here.
Charles Spanky III?
Here.
Okay, you have a quorum.
Okay, may the record reflect, we have a quorum. So tonight, numbers four and five are essentially the same thing. So we're going to have our, we'll just kind of combine them into one public portion and the public hearing. I guess the only really differentiation is the public portion is we can't respond. So we're going to move right into the public hearing, so we'll be able to respond to anyone's questions or concerns.
Rob, before you do, Carl McCluster, I was having trouble getting in, and I came back. Called a quorum, wanted to make sure I was on the record.
Okay, Mark, could you mark that Carl is present?
Yes, I thought he said yes, but I apologize. Sorry.
Okay.
He's no.
Okay, great, thank you. Okay, so is there anyone from the public? Number five, the first public hearing prior to the beginning of any substantive work on the charter amendments pursuant to CGS 7-191A. So if there's anyone from the public that would like to comment, please do so.
I'd like to make a comment.
Could you state your name and address for the record?
Lawrence Bucel, 152 Shagbark Drive, Derby, Connecticut.
Henry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want, you're asking for opinions for the charter revision. And basically, I had like four points I wanted to bring up for you people to decide on, might be helpful for on the police department. Basically, what I'm asking, basically, you see it's been going on, a lot of departments are recommending now the most police officers coming on the job have a bachelor's degree. That's one of the things I wanted to bring up. Also, if you're in the military, it should be equal to a bachelor's degree. So basically, if you had somebody coming out of the service and you wanted to get on a police force, that would be equal. Number three, I want to bring up, for a long time, our city does not let our city residents that went to college for criminal justice or have college degree, you know, they don't give them points. Most cities give their residents like 5 points for a police exam coming on, that want to get onto their own city job, like Derby Police. So if a kid that grew up all his life in Derby wants to join the police force in Derby, we should give them like 5 points. That's just another thing I'm bringing up. Bridgeport and a lot of cities do that. And in a lateral exchange, I believe you brought that up already. That's for different departments. If you if they want to switch over to our department, I think it's a very good idea. Most police departments in the country do have lateral exchange. But basically, when they come over, they have a lie detector test. And I don't believe Derby has that. That would be a good idea. And I think in some of the readings I was seeing, that the chief wanted to do that too. That's all I really have to say. This is for discussions for you.
Larry, just to clarify, you're saying lateral moves, not within city departments, but from one department to another, from another city?
Right. How it basically works with most police departments. All right, say, because, you know, I come from a family of police officers, so I see how a lot of this works. And my brother happened to be on lieutenant on another police department, and they were actually getting people from down south that are police officers. What they do, they would come onto a department, most departments, they would have to go through a lie detector test if they want to switch from one department. So like say they wanted to come, if we had it in Derby.
What a mistake they made doing this guy talk.
And I believe they're, you know, I don't, like, I, I don't know if they would have to take a test or what, but it's another way. Most of the police officers from another city would already be trained in law enforcement, so it's a schooling we wouldn't have to pay for it. But still, you want to get the best, so you would have a lie detector test. I believe your chief will be able to explain that to you better, and I think there probably was discussion on that before.
Okay.
Larry, Chuck Stanky here. One question. When you said points, was that just points for residents? You mentioned something with a degree. So 5 points for just residents, not whether you got a degree or not, correct?
They would have. So I reckon what I would say, most people coming on departments now should have a bachelor's degree. Same thing for a chief of police should have a college degree. It's a different world out there now. And high school education doesn't cut anymore, because basically the police today have to be psychologists. They have to be more than just a police officer. And you'll find out most people that go to college have a better understanding. That's my opinion. And a lot of departments I actually heard are actually talking about making minimum requirements a college degree. I would believe most of the small towns now, most of the officers coming on do have college degrees.
I understand it. My question was, when you said points for residents, you also said with degrees. So I understand that you want bachelor's degree for applications. But the points is regardless whether you have a degree or not, correct?
No, what I'm trying to say, okay, my son's a police officer. Okay, he's in a different town. I live in Derby. My son should have, when he graduated out of, I'd say, the University of New Haven, where he went, he got his degree. And he came, and they were having a police test, let's say, in Derby. For my son being a resident that's living in Derby, we should give our kids in our own town 5 points, you know, on a written exam.
That understood. That was my question. Thank you.
And just to be clear, Larry, I think those were two separate points. You're saying that they should have a bachelor's degree or military service for hiring. And then secondly, if they're a resident, they should be given points, correct?
Right. But military, I'm saying they don't have to have a bachelor's degree. You know, we got to, some of the women and men coming out of the service, we should give them a little bump too. So I wouldn't, you know, basically they had training coming out of the service. So that's what I'm saying. That would be equal to me. And a lot of departments, I believe, are doing the same thing. If either a bachelor's degree or military training, or, you know, you're in the service. And the 5 points is just for our kids in our city, just to give them, you know, I mean, somebody that grew up here all his life, went to Derby school system and everything else, why not give our child, the kids a 5 points? Like I said, they do that in most cities. You can check that out and you'll see. Well, a lot of cities get 5 points, and they even give points for veterans too.
Okay. All right, does anyone else have any questions for Larry?
Yeah, Chris. So Larry, just to double, just because I'm writing this down, your position is that a bachelor's should be a requirement unless you have some form of military service.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And I do believe also you're going to have enough minorities, because a lot of minorities are basically going to the colleges now, where you'll have enough of a pool of both, you know, of everybody to take the test. So it's not, because some people might say, well, it's discriminatory. Well, you want a bachelor's degree. It's not discriminatory. We have to get better qualified officers coming on a job. And I believe with a bachelor's degree, it's a first step in doing that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else have a question for Larry? Okay, is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak?
Rob, Charlie Sampson, if I could.
Hi, Charlie.
Charlie Sampson, 6th Commodore Hall, also a member of the Board of Aldermen, and I just want to clear up a couple of things that I wrote in what I felt the charter should change. Just specifically Section 29, that's an outdated section. It says that we'll give the sum of $1,000 to the Griffin Hospital annually. I know the tax board doesn't do it now. There's no line item for it, although we do continue to give to the Derby Neck Library. So I think that just correcting that language is relatively easy. I think we need to step into the 21st century on the Section 28, 52, and 70, where notices to the public have to be published in a newspaper. I think we have to start looking more at electronically publishing. That's a cost savings to the city. And also, I don't know anybody that reads a newspaper too much anymore. So posting things on websites is what a lot of other towns do. Those are two fairly simple ones. I'm going to agree with Mr. Bussell on his points as far as hiring lateral transfers. The language in the police sections 41, 43, and 44 specifically state that regular officers are taken out of the supernumerary hiring pool. But that hasn't been the case for years. I believe that people should be vetted through a testing agency, all the standard tests after they pass. I do know of towns that give 5 points to residents, but I also know of numerous towns that take lateral transfers. And I believe that we need to give the chief discretion on where to place these lateral transfers. I myself am a lateral transfer from a large city to a smaller town. I did not start at the bottom of the pay scale. The chief had discretion based upon my 20 years to move me up the pay scale, just in pay alone, not in any and other things like vacation time or sick time. And the last thing I just want to bring up over that is I too believe that the minimum requirements for a police chief in this town should be at least a bachelor's degree in criminal justice or business administration. Also, the succession to the chief when the chief retires should remain with the deputy chief as long as that deputy chief has the qualifications to be the chief. Then testing should be limited to sergeant and above. I know that in the past, Derby has had patrolmen who've gone from patrol to chief. I don't think that that affords somebody the time that they need in a supervisory position in order to take over the role as a chief of police. So I think that this board should look at the qualification for candidates as far as the chief position goes. And I thank you for your time. The rest of it I have in writing. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me.
Thanks, Charlie. Everyone does have a copy of your submissions to the Board of Aldermen. But thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak?
I have a question for Charlie.
Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah. So I just want to be clear because you said that, and maybe I misunderstood, you said you wanted that the requirements for the chief should be a bachelor's degree. That's correct?
A minimum of a bachelor's degree or above. I'll let you guys decide how you want it. I know a lot of towns, especially the two that I've been working in, they both require a minimum of a bachelor's degree in criminal justice or business administration.
And so then the deputy chief promotion, I just wanted to make sure I understood that clearly.
So no, the succession to chief, currently today that when the chief of police leaves, the deputy chief steps into that position. If you put a minimum qualification on the current chief, then that deputy would have to meet that minimum qualification that you would have on the chief's position. So let's say the deputy chief only has an associate's degree and the charter has been changed to make it a minimum of a bachelor's degree. Well, the deputy chief has to either get a bachelor's degree before being appointed or you would have to go on to testing. Testing in that position will be limited to sergeant and lieutenants. And if no qualified applicants came from within the city of Derby, then I would say that the testing should go to the outside and be open up.
All right. Thank you for that clarification, Charlie. Appreciate it.
No problem, Carl.
Is there anyone else for questions for Mr. Sampson?
I just had one question. It's Chris. With regards to electronic publishing, just to give you an understanding, basically, like, where are you coming from? Where would you like us to write, or how would you like us to write into the charter what qualifies as electronic publishing? Like, what do we use? We don't really have, the Connecticut Post online section. What were you envisioning just to give us an idea of where to start on, you know, what your position is on it?
So any public notices that the town has to put out in regards to meetings,
yeah.
I can get you exact language, Chris, but there's other things too. So when we go out for bids, all our bids should come through the finance department or whatever department we find to handle it. And all those bids should be published on the city website.
Mm-hmm.
So that vendors can pull those bids off and the results of those bids also published so that the public knows who the bid went to. But you know, just any notice, and I think if you talk to Mark Garofalo, he can let you know a little bit better of the idea of what has to go out. And one ad in for a meeting being published is like $600.
Yes.
So there's numerous ones that are done, and we do no electronic publishing, which a lot of towns do. So even an RFP doesn't have to be doesn't have to be published in the paper, but it does because of our charter. An RFP could be posted on our website, which people could go and get, thus saving us money for all the RFPs that we put out.
$600 times how many we do, right?
Yeah, no, it's a real, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Hey, anyone else? Just one last follow-up, Charles. Okay. So just wanted your opinion. I know the group will discuss it all later. If someone is, for example, is the deputy chief, and they are on the educational requirement, let's say that they are in school and moving towards their bachelor's degree, what would your feeling about being, if that person has been making good progress, for them being temporarily assigned as chief while they complete their degree, and then actually having the full responsibility once, so they'd be an interim chief or something like that? I just wanted your opinion on that.
I actually, Carl, do not have a problem with that. An acting chief, many towns and cities have acting chiefs for a period of time. I would hesitate to say that, you know, you can't be an acting chief for 4 years, allowing you to get a bachelor's degree over your 4 years. But I don't have a problem with, you know, somebody being acting chief for 6 months as they finish up their schooling. But, you know, as you move up the ranks, you know that, you know, I'm sure that the current chief and the current deputy chief talk, and they discuss, hey, listen, I'm going to be here for another 2 years. And the deputy chief says, well, I only got an associate's degree. I got to get on the ball. So they talk to each other, and it usually works out. But I have no problem with an acting chief in a limited basis for as far as time goes.
Understood. Thanks for the input there. Appreciate it.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak?
Yes. Hi, Karen Chemises. I wanted to speak in regards to the tax board's changes.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. I noticed that you're wanting to eliminate the people in the tax board, and I think part of the reasoning is because it's getting harder and harder to find people to participate. But I don't think that should be the reasoning for why you would want to cancel the tax board. If you look at Shelton right now, that's a unique situation where their tax board really doesn't have enough of a voice. And so it's down to a few aldermen and the mayor making the decision. Now, I'm not talking personalities, but I just don't want to have that limited amount of people having the authority over everything. I think by virtue of having two boards that are able to make votes and present things, it's a far better choice than to go with what you're proposing.
Yeah, that was a proposal submitted by Alderman Sill, and that's all it was a proposal for this commission to review and consider, not necessarily adopt. So there's going to be several, you know, obviously we have proposals from the aldermen, and we're taking them from the public now, and also the commission themselves are going to have proposals. So and that's all they are at this point. So we'll discuss those and see where these things rank on the pecking order, but I understand what you're saying, and it makes a lot of sense. Anyone have any questions for Karen?
Yeah, I'm sure that Sam can express how much time and effort he's had to put in with the tax board over the years that he has been serving, and certainly that's a full-time job, at least a portion of the year. The aldermen have enough on their table as well.
Sure, agreed. Does anyone have any questions for Karen? Okay, is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak? Rick Dunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rick Dunn, 241 Silver Hill Road. I just wanted to comment on Charlie's proposal regarding web publishing of notices. It's a good idea. You really need to find a way to include something in the charter that allows for it. Currently, I believe it says that you must publish a notice in a newspaper with a general circulation in the city. So that really limits your options, and it is incredibly expensive. Just note that, I mean, obviously your council will review anything you take up. There could be some issue with state statute, particularly on state-funded projects. But that aside, I think it's a really smart idea, and I just wanted to second the idea.
Great, thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak?
Mr. Chairman, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayhew.
Walt Mayhew, 3 Gennetti Drive. You have a lot of significant potential changes that have been given to you to consider. And I know also there's a desire to get a lot of this done so that it could be voted on in November. And I just want to encourage you not to be bound by any kind of artificial time constraints like that. I think when you're taking a look at doing 4-year terms for elected officials, making the mayor full-time, changing possibly or eliminating the composition of the tax board, and potentially, as well I've heard, and I don't know if this has been mentioned before or not, the composition of the Board of Aldermen, these kinds of things are such significant changes that we really need to get data from groups like the Conference of Municipalities and find what like communities are doing in these various situations. I know that it's been a problem getting people to serve on the various Board of Aldermen and Tax Board and things like that. And I also know that for a long time now, there's been a disparity in the one person, one vote with the size of the wards. And so it might be something to look at where you redefine how many wards you have and reduce the number of aldermen who serve that way. I would say that if you reduce the tax board, I would probably be more in favor of having less people serving as opposed to eliminating it. I'm kind of in agreement with Karen on a lot of what she said. And I know the historic problems with between the Board of Aldermen and the Tax Board, having served on both of them. But I think we're much better off forcing those boards to work together than eliminating one and overloading the other with all the work that needs to be done. As far as 4 years for the mayor, if you do it for the mayor, I think you should do it for all the elected officials. It doesn't make a lot of sense to run elections in a 2-year cycle for a municipality and then a 4-year cycle for the mayor. I just want to caution you with that change in that anytime you restrict the voters' abilities to make a choice, that is a significant restriction and should not be done lightly. And if you take a look at the average terms of the mayor before they are usually replaced, that's in that 6 to 8 year time frame. So I understand that in 4 years, a lot of people think, you know, the first year you're getting to know the job and the next year you're running for re-election. Quite honestly, a good mayor runs for re-election from the very beginning because he wants to fulfill his promises to the people that have elected him. As far as a full-time mayor, I don't know how the city will ever be able to afford that. I've talked to some people and the salary that would be required for them to step out of an industry or a business position and forego that for the point of serving as the mayor is quite substantial. The concerns I've heard expressed is what happens at the end of that 6 or 8 years, how much earning power have they lost to go back into private industry or into the corporate setting. Historically, we've had to rely upon people who had their own business, were in a profession that they could afford to dedicate time to helping and run the city, or people who have retired and have the time. And I don't see how that's going to really be a, be able to be effectively changed. I realize it's a smaller pool than maybe what we'd like to see available to people to run, but by and large, those people are well qualified to hold the office.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Mayhew? Okay, hearing none, is there anyone else from the public that would wish to speak?
I would, please.
Tara Heider.
51 Franklin Avenue, Tara Heider. I believe that we need to start thinking about raising a standard of qualifications for some city positions. There are some city positions that require certain background and experience and some that do not. And I'm thinking of positions such as public works director, treasurer, and any other positions that this commission deems appropriate. I think that the city should really require work experience in the field in order for a person to be considered for a position, whether it's an appointed position or an elected position. I think it's important that we start thinking about the capacity and the experience of the person for that position. And I don't have any, you know, specific positions in mind. It's just that sometimes there really is a visible difference in the town with the effectiveness of that person based on their experience. So I think that Derby really deserves someone with as much experience as possible in some city positions.
Okay, does anyone have any questions for Tara? Okay, thank you. Is anyone else from the public that would wish to speak? Is there anyone else from the public that would wish to speak? Giving Mr. Lionetti a second to unmute himself to see. Going third time, is anyone else from the public that would like to speak? Okay, hearing none, may I have a motion to close the public portion in public hearing?
Chuck Stanky, so moved.
Motion by Mr. Stanky.
Ralph Capiello, second.
And a second by Mr. Capiello. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. So we're going to move on to number six, the charge to the commission, the discussion of the items to be considered by the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, and we have several items here, and we can discuss them now. Some of them were already discussed by Mr. Sampson, but the first one would be the mayor, and I know we've talked about this. Mr. Mayhew brought it up as well. Section 10 of the mayor says that the mayor of said city shall be the chief executive officer thereof. He or she shall be vigilant in the execution and enforcement of its laws and ordinances. He or she shall have the power to administer oaths, to sign contracts, deeds, and other instruments. The mayor shall recommend the adoption of such measures connected with the police, security, health, cleanliness, general well-being of said city, and the improvement of its government and finances as he or she shall seem expedient. He or she may communicate to the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, at the end of each fiscal year, a general statement of the situation, state, and condition of the city in relation to its government, expenditures, finances, and improvements, which report to the recommendation shall be kept on file in the office of the town clerk. He or she shall also discharge all duties imposed upon him or her by the charter and the ordinances of the city, and shall have exercised all other executive administrative powers conferred by the laws of the state and upon any municipal chief executive. So again, you have it in front of you. Mr. Sampson stated that he believes that this position should be a full-time position and elected to a four-year term. Unfortunately, the incoming mayor must now inherit the last administration's first-year budget and does not have any full accounting of the budget until his second year. So in other words, he's elected in year one. He's dealing with the previous administration's budget. By the time he is in year two, his final year of his first term, he's running for re-election and creating his own budget.
So Mr. Sampson is recommending that we make this first term a four-year position, and then every 2 years after the first term. This should also come with commensurate with the salary of a full-time person and a city vehicle. So this is something that we're going to have to gauge our appetite for. And again, these are all proposals and not necessarily something that we have to put on the charter revision for vote. But these are the items that we need to discuss. I've heard that the first 4 year and then 2 years subsequent, I'm not sure that's even possible. I would have to check with the Secretary of State. I was told that you can't have different term numbers, so that if it's for the first term, it has to be for the second. But I'll look into that and make sure that we have that information before we make any sort of decision. So is there any other questions or comments concerning this proposal?
I happen to agree. I think it's something to look into about the 2 year part of it. Obviously, you know, that could be violations of state statutes and whatnot, election laws. You know, I hate to see us getting it. I think it's important actually, because this seems to be the mayor terms seems to be a big one for us. I think everybody's kind of in the, at least I want to say, same page of maybe trying to adjust the mayor terms, but at least we're all in kind of maybe the same playbook at least, which is the start. But I'd hate to see us get bogged down if this is not even something that's doable, given our time restraints. I don't even know, maybe the Corporation Council can look into that for you too.
Yeah, actually, if you'd like, I'll opine on it right now to kind of bring the conversation to a conclusion.
Please do.
It is materially impossible to do that suggestion, because when you hold an election, you have a term that someone is running for. So if your incumbent mayor gets reelected and they go from 4 years to 2 years, and let's assume in that 2 year term, you have the incumbent loses. Well, you cannot now alter the term from 2 years to 4 years for the non-incumbent winner, because they ran for the term that was whatever the ballot was for. So, you know, it's just materially impossible to alter it like that, because people lose elections. And when you run for office, you run for a term. You don't run for an ambiguous term or a floating term. So I think that you either have to decide, keep it 2 years, go to 4 years, compromise at 3 years, but whatever the term is, it needs to be consistent.
Okay, great.
So basically we got to pick one.
That's why we're here.
Yep, perfect. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for that information, Mr. Moreno. Okay. Any other discussion on that topic?
Yeah, can I just pipe up real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so, I mean, the only thing that I could see with regards to Mr. Sampson's things he was looking for, I would be very concerned about including the inclusion of a city vehicle, just in terms of how hard it is to get budgets moving right now, and how hard, and just, it's a mess, and I don't know about including a city vehicle. I think it would just be too costly. It's already going to be a haul to try to get us, if we decide that we want to have a full-time mayor and that person needs to be paid commiserately to the things that Walter spoke about. I don't know if keeping a city vehicle also that expense is going to cut it. So that would just be my 2 cents on that.
I'm going to agree with you on that, Chris. Other than that, I like everything that was proposed.
I'm sorry, Sam, what was that first part I missed?
I said I'm going to agree with what Chris just said. I agree with everything as far as changing the terms and full time. I'm going to agree with Chris. Everything but a city vehicle.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you guys there as well. You know, we have the mayor has access to gas, so for his own vehicle. So the Board of Aldermen just transferred a vehicle from the police department that the city can use. So if there's say a meeting in Hartford that the mayor needs to attend, he doesn't necessarily have to take his own vehicle. He can take a city vehicle that's not necessarily for his own personal use, but for the city's use.
I kind of agree with you. Stanky here. You know, we're going to fall into the, well, when are we going to buy a car? Every year, every 2 years or whatever. But I'm glad you mentioned that he does get a gas allotment to use and now with the car. So that's just my opinion on that. Okay. I agree with everything else that's there. We have to come up with a number. I do feel that the mayor's position should be a full-time position. It's just job encumbering now. I mean, we're moving into the new century in whatever terms we come up with. But to try to get to somebody to do give up most of their life for a part-time position is crazy.
I'm going to agree with you there, Chuck, and I'm going to have to disagree with Walt. This city cannot afford not to have this a full-time job where somebody's committed full-time to it and not liaisoning and manipulating the words of the charter, saying it's only part-time and being treated as such. We're falling into this trap with the taxes. The taxes are going up. Of making it full-time, dedicating somebody full-time. Listen, yes, they have a term, but you know that going into it. So you run knowing that. You could be out in whatever, 4 years, 2 years, 6 years, 8 years. So I agree with them.
I mean, especially now. Now, you can't ask a part-timer. I mean, we're going to have to be spending a lot of time up in Hartford talking to the legislature, and you just can't rely on your own valley legislators. I've dealt with the legislature up there in Hartford with the fire service for years. You have to get up there. You got to show your face up there in the LOB and stuff. And to ask a part-timer to travel to Hartford, then come to municipal meetings in the evening, it just doesn't make business sense at all. It's good business sense to have a full-time person dedicated to that.
Can I just get in from a slightly different perspective on that too? Just with regards to the level of knowledge that you have in order to run a municipality these days, we have Rick Dunn, we have a full-time economic development person, but you really have to know the ropes of brownfield remediation and transportation and all of these things. You really have to have a certain base level of knowledge of, I think, in order to push Derby to get us through the things that we need to get done. We're not a municipality that's out in the suburbs that just has to really worry about, you know, making sure that funding for the school system doesn't go down and municipal aid doesn't go down. We have a lot of our issues, and it's going to require someone who knows a lot of that, a lot of the ropes to that stuff. And I think we need to hire someone and pay them commiserately to know that. So thank you.
Well, I'd like to chime in there, and I absolutely agree that we need a longer term for the mayor. It's impossible for someone to adequately govern the city with such a short term, not just because they're running for re-election or anything like that, but it virtually blocks out anyone who is not already an insider in one of the parties from running. It's challenging enough with party politics such as they are. And one of the good things I think about Derby is it's not so balanced on one side or the other, but it does create a challenge. So the mayor needs time to be able to work through. And really a question of where we want Derby to go. If we want Derby to just continue to churn in the water with all these projects and all these things that haven't been able to get done, it takes relationship, as I think Chuck said, in Hartford. People have to know you, have to know who you are, have to know that you're going to be there so that when they cut their deal with you or make that commitment to you, that you're going to be there to see it through. People don't work with organizations, people work with people. And so if there's someone that is the chief elected official of the city that's going to be there for more than a half a minute, then it opens the opportunity for them to work even beyond the term of the legislators. That's one of the problems with the legislators as well. But to be the mayor, you got to be there. And I think, you know, you get what you pay for. I think the value of a mayor that's paid a salary commensurate with the public service that it requires. And so it's a public service job. So we're not trying to hire someone to be the head of the of Canon or of IBM or something like that. They're the chief elected official and the senior officer of the corporation called Derby. And if that's what we want, we have to pay someone a salary that will allow them to then give themselves to public service with a 4-year term, for example, and someone can serve that 4 years and make a difference in 4 years. as opposed to feeling that I have to run over and over and over again. So I think it will open the door being full-time for 4 years. And if someone's looking to get rich in the job, then they don't need the job anyway. We're not looking for someone who wants to make their money off the backs of the people of Derby and off our taxes. We need someone who's going to invest. And finally, I'd say that someone that does a good job invest well their time and the resource that's available to them through all the different offices and departments that are working with him. That person will make a difference because they'll be able to have that fluidity and that tendency in the office to be able to move projects forward and not have people wait them out, because they know if they can stall long enough, then I can block this thing from happening that I don't want to happen, that the people need to happen. So that's my shot at that.
Thanks, Carl. All good points.
I mean, if I may, real quick, I mean, if I know some people might have a concern, if it's 4 years might be too, or 4 or 8 years if they get reelected might be too long, we can also institute a safeguard and put term limits on if needed as well. That's something, you know, we can discuss, but everybody seems to kind of be on the same page. But if that's something that is a concern for someone, that maybe we're not getting the best leadership, we can always institute term limits or, you know, recall. I don't know how we would work that out, but, you know, that's always an option too.
Carlo, just for Chuck here, just from the last, when we did the charter revision, we did get a lot of pushback, because one of the main points was with term limits. Got a lot of pushback. So that's just something to keep in the back of your mind that was there. I'm not for or against. It just that I would like to let you know that there was a lot of pushback from both public and other people. So
they didn't like the idea of term limits?
No, they didn't.
Okay. That's good to know. Well, that's why we're here.
It's
good.
But it's just there. It's just, I'm not for or against either or. It's just, you know, just the advice that that's what happened the last two times. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I am a proponent of term limits, because I think people that are against term limits because they want to run it forever. And anyone who wants to run it forever doesn't need to be in the job. The reality is that a two-term limit on a four-year term, or even on a three-term limit on a three-year term, is plenty of time for somebody to make a difference, set the table, and get out of the way.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of information
about the term limits, because I feel like if you don't like them, you're going to vote them out anyway. I do like the idea of the 4 years. I'm just thinking that with the mayor in a full-time position, how much pushback from residents is there going to be? I already hear a lot of flack over the post that went up on Facebook over the mill rate increase. So I think we have to be cost conscious with everything we're doing.
Ralph, I'm in agreement with you. I think I said earlier, and I want to make sure it was clear, that we're not trying to pay someone a corporate executive's salary to be the mayor.
Right.
The office of mayor is a public service job, and somebody that really wants to serve is going to serve at a reasonable rate.
Yeah, we just have to, well, I don't know, is that going to be our decision as to the reasonable rate? That's not going to be up to us, right?
No, to adopt it here and then bring it to the alderman for approval prior for it to go to referendum.
Yeah, it needs to pass to the alderman as well. So, Mr. Marino, did you want to add something?
Yeah, when I hear some concepts that I think are that you can't do, the concept of recall, I do not believe there's any statutory authority for that. And you know, municipalities are creatures of statute. You can only do what the legislature has permitted. There are a couple of municipalities in the state that have the recall, like the city of Milford, but that's only because of a special act that was passed. So I don't believe you have the authority to institute a recall, but I will verify that.
Okay.
But we can, if we need to, do term limits, correct?
You can have term limits. You know, the arguments for and against generally are, you know, term limits for the voters are, they vote every 2 to 4 years, and if they don't want an incumbent to remain in office, they vote them out of office, and that's the voter term limit. or you can institute, you know, an 8-year term limit or 12-year term limit. That's your choice.
And this is Mark Garfalo. I just want to, while you're on this subject, just so you have all the information, because I heard Carl talk about 3-year possibly, or 2-3-year terms or whatever it was. But I would just ask counselor to look into that matter, because the statute says that the municipal election shall be held in the even year, and the state and federal elections are.
You're correct, Mr. Clerk. I think, and I said 2, 3, or 4, but your municipal elections are only every other year. So it has to, your terms have to be an even number. You are correct, Mr. Clerk.
Okay. So we're going to have to look at whether it's 2 or 4 years. And reiterate what Chuck said about in the past, it wasn't very popular to institute term limits. And then again, what Mr. Moreno said, leave it up to the voters if they want term limits and they don't want somebody. I mean, the mayor in Shelton has been there for 20 years, if not more, maybe. And their taxes are low, their businesses are booming. So if there was term limits, then he wouldn't be there. So the voters keep voting him in term after term. So that's something to consider. And I'd be weary of changing it, putting the suggestion up for 4 years and also having term limits, because if we're going to institute those two items into one question, if somebody doesn't want term limits, it's going to get shot down. So, you know, if we're going to look at that, that might be something that we want to consider having as two separate questions.
Do we know any other
chair?
Go ahead, Mark.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Just as a process standpoint, just a couple of things that just because I want to, before you kind of go have a conversation about some, the issue of the questions. And you can make a recommendation to the Board of Aldermen, but the Board of Aldermen will determine the questions. How many questions, if you could do it in one question or multiple questions. I'm sure they would take your advice, but that ultimate vote is decided by the Board of Aldermen. And there was an issue of like a car and even the salary. That's not something that you would set in the charter. Like those are things like the salary would ultimately have to be set by the Board of Aldermen.
Correct.
So yeah. That's not something you want to put in the charter, because you don't want to have to change the charter every time you do things like that. The charter is the fountainhead in the legal language. So it is, those are the general concepts. Anything else that needs to be fleshed out that could change from time to time on a more regular basis would be really done by ordinance by the older men and women.
Which would essentially save this commission a lot of time, you know, not having to worry about salaries, but that'll come from the Board of Aldermen, correct?
Okay.
I just want to say one last thing, and thanks for hearing all these comments about this particular item, is that we need to be aware that the power of tenancy that goes from being in the mayor in an expanded term. So if you're extending the term, then you're also giving that person, some would say a lot more time to mess up, but I would say a lot more time also to dig in and establish themselves in such a way that it would be hard to overcome being in the paper as frequently as they want to be, being on TV as frequently as they want to be, to influence the public, because they are the mayor. There's a certain credibility that goes with being seen and being heard often enough. So that's my last comment, but I do agree with a longer term limit. I think it's a necessity if we want Derby to move forward. And I also think we need to really look hard, whether it's a second question, at term limits if we go to 4 years.
Okay.
Now, do we know, will we be the only Valley town, if this was approved, that would have a 4-year term?
Yes.
I believe so, yeah.
Because somebody, one of my neighbors, when I mentioned what we were considering, said to me, well, what are we doing wrong? How do the other towns make it work and we need to go for? I don't know if this is a general feeling among the public in Derby or not. I'm just bringing it up.
My reasonings, Ralph, behind that is several fold. Number one,
I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea.
But
to what Rob said, you're already running a year and a half after you just got elected. So you're already working on the previous administration's budget by the time you get a year in, right? And you're already running. It's right. Hard. You try to build a house. It takes, what, 9 months, a year, right? You're trying to run a city and grasp all these different things and all these boards and commissions. And so I think they need to do some kind of body of work. Secondly, how many times in our Derby's history have we ever had a mayor get unseated after one term? Twice. The answer is two. Mm-hmm. Lastly, it's very costly to run an election. So we got to look at it from a monetary standpoint, how we're doing this every 2 years and the cost that goes with it.
I'm just saying, when it's presented to the public, we got to present it the right way, because that's one of the immediate questions that came up to me was, why do we have to do it? How is Ansonia making it work on 2 years? How's Seymour getting it done? I look at Shelton, you know. I'm all for 4 years.
Shelton hasn't had a change of guard in 28 years.
To Mr. Mayhew's point, you know, you should be running for re-election on day one of your first term. So, I mean, that's a great point. And but also to Mr. Sampson's point, you're working on day one under a previous administration's budget. So, you know, your hands are tied there. And by the time you roll out your first budget, you're already looking at re-election. So you're already in year two with an election coming up. So both points are solid points. And back to what Mr. Mayhew said, you know, you're looking at re-election on day one. You know, if re-election is in 4 years, then so be it. But I'm fully on board with what Mr. Sampson said about the working under the first year under somebody else's budget. And by the time you roll your first budget out, you're already looking at a re-election campaign.
Can we take a roll call and just see if there's anybody that doesn't believe in a 4-year term? So that way we can sort of nail down, like, hey, you know, like, do we need to rehash it, you know?
Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't think we should be voting on anything right away. The flavor of this is to discuss everything, like we said last week, to pick good things out. We're having good dialogue here, to get the dialogue, to be able to digest all this. And then later on, eliminate some of the things that we don't think will go because we are in that time constraint. You got to live in a wonderland if you think all these things are going to go through and be there. So I think we're having good dialogue. I think for the first meeting,
yeah,
we should just discuss the things that are proposed.
I agree.
My apologies.
I think we had like 8 to 10 proposals from the Board of Aldermen. We had 6 members of the public speak tonight. I think we got 2 emails from the public concerning this. So, you know, I would hesitate to, you know, take a vote, not necessarily a vote, but this is something we need to review every item, not just the first one, and then digest it, do our homework. And then, you know, in the meetings coming up, we can delve a little deeper into that and take a poll and see where we stand. So is there any more discussion on this before we move on to the next item?
So, hi, this is Gina McKay.
Hey, Gina.
So I'm a newbie to this charter, but I just wanted to say that I agree with the 4 years. However, running the position like within a business for the city of Derby, there needs to be, I believe, when we communicate this out to the public, there needs to be some sort of accountability that is maintained for this position around performance. And so if there's anything that we can consider around, you know, what are those key performance indicators or what are the achievements or any sort of, I'll say, you know, goals that are expected for this position on, you know, on a yearly basis. And perhaps, you know, maybe when we reach a 2-year that we kind of hear the voice of the citizens of the town or the city, or there's some sort of provision that we have the agreement that the individual is meeting those performance expectations for the city. And, you know, if we want, so we're saying that we want to move the city along. If the individual is in that position for 4 years, it could also hurt us, you know, in terms of, you know, if they're not doing what they said or committed to doing. So I think that that should be part of the decision or some sort of, you know, how we present this so that it makes individuals feel that they have a say and that, you know, they're not stuck for 4 years. Performance is key.
Absolutely.
Drew, did you have something you wanted to add? Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry if you can't hear me. I'm outside. But I, as a member of the staff who has had my employment be concurrent with this mayor's terms, just speaking from experience, I'm 100% in favor of the four-year thing. I can just tell you that we've been there for not even 3 years. Your first year is just learning where the light switches are in the building. And it's into to Chuck's point and whoever earlier talked about, you know, after that, when you start, when you're campaigning, and I do agree with the sentiment that what you said about starting your term on day one, but to have to stop, let's say 14 or 15 months in to literally actively campaign, that's where the problem lies, in my opinion, having gone through it, being in City Hall to see that happen, certainly not being in the mayor's role, but being in the mayor's suite and seeing the issue that causes, because, you know, you're stretched so far after hours with the campaign part of things that you're during hours, you know, it just becomes a full 24-hour cycle that becomes way more political than administrative and mayoral, I think. And that's the disservice I think we do our taxpayers with it being 2 years. So again, I'm sorry to interrupt the meeting, but as a member of staff, I felt like that perspective would have been helpful.
Yeah, great point. Thanks, Drew. Okay, is there anyone else that wants to discuss?
I just looked at it from the perspective too, like with regards to having an interim finance director now, you know, when you're looking at it, if you have these shortened terms, if you have for some reason you know that you need to replace one of these positions, you're trying to find a qualified candidate and you're telling them that, hey, we have, you know, yeah, we have elections every 2 years. It's whatever, like the politics plays too much of a part, I think, in, you know, in whether we can find a qualified candidate for position, whatever it happens to be. And I think if we had 4 years and something like what happened, you know, last November happened and we had 4 years, then you could turn around and say, hey, look, we're going to hire a new finance director and you're going to have 2-3 years to be able to do your work. Right now we have to tell them that, hey, you know, there's 12 months from now, there's another election and you may, you know, who's going to take that job? You know,
that's a great point that I didn't think of. That's a solid point.
So thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, for brevity, I'm not going to read the charter. So we're going to move on to section 16, which deals with the treasurer's position and the authority to perform the duties. Mr. Sampson's suggestion was that he believes that based upon the requirements of the treasurer position, that we move it from an elected official to an appointed position. Then duties of the treasurer require a specific skill set that will assist the city as it moves forward. By allowing this to be an elected position, we enable those who do not have a specific skill set required by the current charter to lead a city with a knowledgeable base that may not be compatible with the position. So that sort of goes in line with what Kara Hyder had mentioned. Having qualifications for a specific position, treasurer, public works director, maybe parks and rec director. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I got to...
Go ahead, Kyle.
Go ahead, Oney.
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, the optics on this right now are just not very good. I mean, I don't want to get too overly political. That's not our purpose here. Mm-hmm. But we want to now, I understand we just replaced, we have a new treasurer, and now we want to take that position away from him. And I just think the optics on it are not very good. I mean, the last treasurer, I mean, we all know what happened. The last treasurer lost the election and then got appointed to a higher paying position. And now this looks like that we want to boot the current treasurer. And I don't want to get us bogged down in that kind of stuff, in the political stuff, because I'm telling you, we will catch resistance and it does not look good. So I just want to be, I'm just being completely honest with you.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Oney. And the big thing you have to watch, my opinion, is that you're taking another thing away from the people in the city of Derby, the taxpayers. Okay, you're taking a position that they elect. I'm for setting specific requirements to be elected for the treasurer. I think we can do that. That, you know, to run for the treasurer, but to take the decision out of the voters' hands is going to give you, like Oney said, man, it's going to be, they're going to dig their heels in.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that might be a tough pill to swallow. I agree with you, Oney. You know, this commission here is very apolitical. So what we decide is going to affect both parties. But like you said, the optics of it based on the timing is a little tough.
Right. Yeah, and I don't want you to, I understand, I'm, you know, the Democratic town chair, and I just would hate to see us lose an opportunity on other things to have something like this come up. Like, and mm-hmm. And it's nothing against Keith or Walt or what, I just think it does not look good, and I think, because once we start rolling downhill, you know how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Chuck, I was wondering what you meant by, I mean, what sort of things you were talking about when you said certain requirements, because, I mean, even putting certain requirements on an elected position, as a person who's going to vote and study the board before I vote, and I happen to be an independent, so I'm not voting Republican or Democrat, I'm voting for a person who has a set of skills and the ability to do a job. I don't want that taken away from me. Right.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's, you know, you can put, to say what Tara had said, come up with job qualifications. You don't want somebody handling the city of Derby as a multi-million dollar corporation, and you don't want somebody handling that doesn't have the qualifications, doesn't understand the money or anything. I was just saying that along with her, that she said that the, you know, qualifications for the job, we can put that in. And I don't know, do we have requirements to be a treasurer? Is there any requirements?
Not that I'm aware of, but Oney and Sam might be able to answer that.
Well, I'd like Vince to answer the question as to what the ability is to put specific requirements other than age is the only thing I know in the presidential election, right? But, you know, what is the ability of the city to put these qualifications in place? Is that a legal thing? So where are you at with that?
The only thing I can add to this, and then I'm sure Vin Marino's biting at the chop to try to answer this right now. The treasurer's duty and responsibility is if you read the charter, I think is about a paragraph, maybe two tops. I mean, Keith has, over the course of all those years that he has been the treasurer, has been the chairman and overseen many other committees. But to my knowledge, the answer to that question is no. Bob brought up. So
another point is, if we determine the job requirements and we put minimum requirements on, the current treasurer doesn't have those minimum requirements. It's the same deal. We still look like we're trying to move him out.
You know, my thought would be, if you don't have the confidence to be able to do that position, you're not going to accept the nomination to run. You know, we talked about one of the items here was eliminating the tax board, maybe because we don't have enough people that you know, were to run for a specific board to put on a ticket. You know, if we're putting major requirements, let's say you need to have a master's degree in accounting to run for treasurer. Well, you know, you're really narrowing down candidates that are A, have that education, or and B, if they do have it, are they willing to run for office?
Mr. Chairman, I'm neither for or against the thing. I just brought it up for discussion because that's what Tara had mentioned. But
right.
You know, it doesn't make a difference to me. What my concern is that we're taking the position, as Oney had said, in taking it out of the hands of the electorate, the voters, and making it an appointment.
Right.
Point of order. So, Vince, I had a question out for Vince, and I'd like to hear him answer.
Yeah, so with respect to, and I was just pulling up the charter to see how it read with respect to the treasurer, but with respect to, I believe the requirements at the moment, you have to be a resident of the city in order to qualify to be the treasurer. I don't believe you need qualifications beyond that. You know, the charter now will speak to that. Now, I'll say in many communities, treasurer is an appointed position. Generally, the problem, the concern with that, I understand, could be that it, you know, just because it's an appointed position doesn't mean the person with to whom is going to be appointed is qualified, right? So you hope that, you know, a mayor would appoint a qualified person, but it doesn't guarantee that the person is qualified. It could be simply a political appointment.
Right.
So I don't know if you're necessarily ensuring that the person who fills the position is qualified, except that if it were appointed, the Board of Aldermen through, you know, kind of personnel, because now it's an employee of the town, could establish a job description. And that job description then could require, whether it be an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, prior experience in finance. But again, many towns that I represent, this position is appointed and not elected. You know, with respect to your vote, you know, you can change that to a Board of Finance and reduce it down to 6 members rather than have 10 members. That's something that you can do. And most towns have a Board of Finance rather than, you know, a board that is larger than 6. In my experience, what we're finding in municipalities now is an absence of people that are volunteering. And what kind of the trend seems to be is as the millennial group gets older, they're not interested in serving the way past generations have. So that's something to consider as you're looking at modifying these boards and commissions, because again, if you keep a commission to 10, you're going to have to find, the parties are going to have to find people who are willing to run and serve. And again, the qualifications to serve in the boat are, you got to be a resident of the town. The qualification to be mayor is simply you got to be a resident of the town. So, you know, I don't think you're going to get through a charter revision the qualifications. If you want to instill qualifications in a position, I think you make it appointed, and then you have the Board of Aldermen establish a job description.
Mr. Dunn?
I see Mr. Dunn has a comment on the subject.
I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a former city treasurer, I'd like to just weigh in on one thing that I think maybe can frame this a little differently. The treasurer's job is not really the job you're talking about in the city of Derby. The treasurer is the people's overseer of what's going on with finances. It's supposed to be the people's representative. What changed over the last charter revision eliminated the city clerk's position. City clerk was the finance director under the old system. And then it created a finance director's position. The qualifications you're talking about are what the finance director should be doing. That's the person who needs to know how to do the job, how to work with a budget, how to handle investments. The treasurer really should be an overseer, should have a minimal salary, and is someone who just performs constitutional duties. I just wanted to offer that because I think you really need to think about what it is you expect of the treasurer versus the finance director.
Thank you. I was going to say when all this stuff started to happen and I started to ask a lot of questions, with the misappropriation of money and stuff. And I even actually had a conversation with Rick, about, and to find out sort of what I could, that's what I really, found out was had sort of gotten jumbled. Like what the treasurer does, what the finance director does, something had gotten a little off kilter. And for accountability reasons, it made it very difficult for that to happen. So I think that we have to look back at the treasurer position, the finance director and all that stuff, and really determine, as Rick said, like what the job position should entail, what it, and whether those qualifications need to stand for what is actually supposed to be the job of the treasurer and the finance director and all that. So.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add, because obviously the city has gone through a period where it had to address major financial matters that kind of dated back many administrations and was carried forward by subsequent administrations.
Right.
And part of the structural problem that we discovered was that the roles and responsibilities between the various positions, whether it be the treasurer, whether it be the finance director, whether it be the tax collector, where they were being kind of gobbledygooked between each other. And you had the treasurer doing responsibilities of the finance director. You had the finance director not necessarily being, and I'm going to use this word in a legal sense, not in a personal sense, but competent to do the job of finance director. And you had a tax collector that, again, had issues with the finance department and or the treasurer. So, as you're considering the charter revisions, I think, don't lose sight of what the city just went through, because, there were structural recommendations that were kind of agreed to by both the BOAT and the Board of Aldermen. And those structural recommendations are what caused the city to maintain its credit rating. So, you want to consider those, I believe it's the 8-point, plan as part of, you don't want to do anything to undermine that, because in doing, in undermining that, you may undermine the city's credit rating.
Right.
Also, Mr. Chair, if I may just add one other point that was not raised, if I may.
Of course.
While there's one paragraph in the city charter regarding the treasurer, it is primarily that position is a creature of the state. So there's a bunch of statutes that govern the position in addition to what you see in the charter itself.
Okay.
So the limit and scope of the duties are not only here; they're also in statute as well.
Okay. Okay, any additional discussion? Okay, we're going to move on to the next one is the low-hanging fruit that we all talked about. The notices to be published in the newspaper. We should bring the section to the current times and include it electronically and not necessarily paper for each section. These are obviously very costly, so if we can eliminate that cost to the city, I think Patty Finn had mentioned it during the Board of Aldermen meeting, and Mr. Sampson mentioned it again tonight, that it's approximately $600 per advertisement. So if we can eliminate that and do it, or at least eliminate most of those and do it electronically, we're going to save a significant amount of money. So any discussion there?
Mr. Chair, may I just add this point?
Of course.
That in the previous charter revision that was passed in 2016, the charter was changed, and it's not an issue that is governed by charter. It's an issue that is governed by statute, and most of the language was taken out of the charter so as to conform with the statute. The statute and the regulations of the state library, which governs the definition of publishing, it still requires that it be published in a paper. It's a state statute issue. There are only two issues that I would encourage you to change these. in the that are still left in the charter that talk about publishing like a physical publication is in the publishing the preliminary budget and publishing a temporary assessment. I can get you the sections of the charter, but the ones for the ordinances and the others are the charter was changed the last time to reflect the state statute, which is really the governing issue. I would encourage you though to add something to the charter to in fact affirmatively require the public, in addition to whatever the state statutes are, but to require a publication on our website so that there is, you know, that those things, wherever it calls for a publication or whatever, that it also, the requirement be that it be posted to the city website.
Hey, Mark, isn't there a part of the publication that it has to circulate to a certain amount, like a publication has to be, it has to reach a certain amount of demographics? So if we have a newspaper, like say back in the day, the Evening Sentinel, and only five people are getting it.
And that, you know, you make a very valid point, Sam.
Because I thought it was all about numbers.
No, well, it's actually in the statute. It's in the, there are several statutes, you know, governing the publication of the legal notices. We have a bunch in our area of, around elections and convention delegates and the certifications and so forth. And they're even at the state statute level, they're not consistent. Some say having a, you know, reasonable circulation in the town. Some say published in a certain county. Some, you know, that all of those things are language that is long past, you know, I think the best way to do it so that we don't have to, again, keep going back is just to change those other two sections so as to just comply with whatever the regulations of the state statutes are. And it really is a function of the newspaper lobby, you know, the people that lobby for the newspapers. You know, they have significant sway at the legislature, so they obviously want to do it. So we can't say publish it in the Valley Independent Sentinel because they're completely digital. We have to publish it in a place where there's a physical publication, even though the circulation of the of even the hard copy of the paper is low. I would yield to counsel, but just so you know that it was changed in most of the sections except for the budget and the assessment, because I just looked it up today because I was curious to make sure.
Right. And the standards tend to be newspapers having a general circulation, newspapers having a substantial circulation. To the lay person, that may not seem meaningful, but a general circulation is less of a circulation than a substantial circulation. That's actually case law on the subject. So, you know, all towns complain about the expense of publication. I have found in all charter towns where this topic has been put on the ballot, most of the times it is rejected by the voters. The voters want, particularly the older voters, want to continue to have publication notice. My thought is, if you want to address this, you simply provide in your charter that I agree that it should go up on your website. So publication on the city website and or as required by state statute, because this way you don't have to amend your charter every time the statute changes. You just follow the law and your charter simply follows the law. So as that law, and the law will eventually be just electronic, because eventually the newspaper lobby is going to lose the argument. But as the statute changes, your obligations changes. So instead of being specific, be more general and say, you know, it's got to go on the website and has to comply with state statute.
That sounds like a real clear answer. And if people want to move off of the newspapers, and we can just ask our state legislators to push that agenda forward at the state level until that's broken down for some of those items.
Great. And Mr. Chair, just to direct you at your convenience, the two sections that could be modified just for correcting the language to bring it all to be consistent would be Section 28 and Section 52. Those would be the two sections that we would need to change to get, and then everything else would be and I'm sorry, in section 70 too, 70 as well, 28, okay. 52, and 70.
Okay, noted.
And I would, or we do put everything on the website now anyway, but I think it's probably for the sake of transparency and the sake of just for good government, I think it makes sense to make sure that it is in fact a requirement in addition to following the statute.
Okay.
As suggested by Counselor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one is section 29, the annual appropriation for certain charities. In here, it says the Board of Taxation annually appropriates a sum of $1,000 to the Griffin Hospital, as well as $500 to Derby Neck Library Association, and also can appropriate any charitable or civic purposes as they determine. Mr. Sampson was asking to reassess why we give the Griffin Hospital $1,000 each year. So that's a fair question. So that's something that we might want to consider.
I don't think I know it's in the charter. I can't remember the last time we have actually given them that $1,000.
Okay.
So back to council, is it at all possible that someone at Griffin Hospital could say, you know, you were supposed to have given us $1,000 a year for the last 50 years, and you haven't given it to us. We want our $50,000. Is that, to Mr. Marino, is that a possibility? He might be indisposed for a moment, but yeah. I'd carry that over until he comes back.
Yeah, please, you can ask that again when he reappears. Okay. Is there any other discussion on that?
If you wanted to get rid of that, you would just eliminate section 29 of the charter that talks about those. There's no requirement to do it if you want to do it.
Right.
Correct.
Sam, do you know if we give the $500 to the Derby Neck Library Association?
I don't. I just know about the Griffin. I know in the past couple of years it has not. I don't believe it has. I'm
checking the budget. If you give me
a second, Charlie, is that correct?
Charlie's saying yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Dunn is saying yes as well. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
They have
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Aaron Chemises, they have not physically given the $500 to Derby Neck Library for the last 2 years.
Okay.
All right.
Well, but there is a line item. There is a line item in the budget for it.
Okay.
Is there any other specific support for the library that's provided by the city? Not there. I mean, as personally, if we're going to support something, we need to support the library before supporting the hospital.
Well, just for clarification, this is Derby Neck Library, which is not the Derby Public Library. Derby Neck Library is a private library association on Hawthorne Avenue, not to be confused with the Derby Public Library that's funded fully by the city.
My apologies. I'm a newbie. I've been driving by it almost every day thinking that's one of my public library brain.
Well, see, you probably were focusing too much on Roseland. I know how that goes on Hawthorne.
I smell pizza right now.
I find it unusual. Maybe it's because I'm new. Why are there any charitable donations listed in the charter? Any?
It's just very old language that nobody's ever taken out.
Yeah. Even if we were still donating to them, we could remove it from the chart.
Right. Yeah, so that might be something we want to really.
Yeah, the line item is also in the budget for the Griffin Hospital too.
Yeah.
But it's not a state. It's not a requirement. It's probably just something that was there when the charter was first adopted in 1922.
Okay.
I think that's low hanging fruit, Ralph.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Ralph. All right. Any more discussion on this topic? Okay, the next one references section 41, 44, and 43, the vacancy in the chief of police or an officer.
2 points here. Mr. Sampson says the progression of the chief of police should be the deputy chief, and the requirement should be moved up from at least a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, business administration, or other public applicable degrees. If the appointed deputy chief does not pose the qualifications, then testing should be limited to sergeants and above. If no candidate qualifies or passes a resume qualification for this test, then a search for a candidate should go outside of the department.
I'll be the first.
Go ahead, Chuck.
I'll be the first after my career there. The big question I have is the ascension to the chief is the deputy chief. I looked in the charter and I said, the charter does not recognize a deputy chief. That is all contractual language. And do we have to make a deputy chief position? If you look at section 41, it says the police department shall consist of one chief, no less than one lieutenant, no less than one detective sergeant, and no less than three sergeants, and so on. We're saying here that the deputy chief be brought up. There's no actual position of deputy chief. The deputy chief now is by a lieutenant, and the lieutenants are detective sergeants, and that went way back before. I don't have any problem with the rising up to where it is, but do we have to go back into section 41 and create a deputy chief position to be able to? And that's something that I'll ask Corporation if he's back. Does police contract override city charter, or does city charter supersede contract? And the second thing is that I go through, I think it's the lateral transfer is a great idea. It's great. All departments do that. I continually still teach at the police academy after there, and I see it saves a boatload of money, and you're getting a good qualified officer. The only thing I have there is chief should have the discretion to move the lateral transfers into a pay step commensurate with the person's experience. I don't think we should get into the city charter with pay scales. I think that's a position of collective bargaining that the police should, the chief should have to bargain there. Couple ways of looking at it is you can get a whole bunch of lateral transfers over, which are really saving money on the training side, all right? But in all actuality, you're spending more money because when an officer starts, it takes them 8 years to make top step. Is it fair to the guy that's been working there for 6 years and then somebody comes in brand new and is getting top gray? I mean, I just think that if they want it and the union has no problem with it, that it's part of collective bargaining. I think we should allow lateral transfers, but the pay step, allowing the chief to actually decide pay, is against collective bargaining. I mean, these guys have a contract and, just mushrooms are there. I think also the requirement of a college degree. Just look what's going on now in TV all around. I mean, having a college degree, I think, is almost absolutely necessary nowadays to become a police officer. So I think that's a great idea. Same thing with the chief having a degree. When Larry Buzzell commented, he that's why I asked, I think we have to be very careful about allowing military people coming from the military and having in lieu of having a bachelor's degree. I mean, you can get somebody from the military that just went in there just to say that they went in there to avoid prosecution or whatever. You're not getting a quality just because they served in the military. You're not getting a person that has the qualifications of having a degree. I think I'm all for having points for residents. I think if you want to work in your town, that you deserve that those extra points. Many towns have that. So that's my opinion on those.
Mr. Chairman, just something to consider again. Putting aside whether or not you're statutorily obligated to have a deputy chief, to the extent that you want to make specific modifications, you first need to look at whether or not any of these positions are subject to collective bargaining agreements. Because you can't, even if you were to modify your charter, if it's subject to a collective bargaining agreement, then you are engaging in a prohibited practice, which the city could get sued over. So if you want to make changes to positions like that, and it's the position is subject to a collective bargaining agreement, that's something we'd have to go to the union with and have an agreement from the union that we can make those changes. So that's just a word of caution. I am looking at the statutes as we're talking just to see if I can find a specific statute related to deputy chief. I am not quickly finding it, so I'll continue to look as you're talking. If I find it or if I don't find it, I'll let you know. But I wanted to let you know about the CBAs to be concerned about.
What are you looking for statutorily with deputy chief? I mean, that's, I don't think there is no statute. Each town has to have a deputy chief. Each town has that. What I was asking was, we're saying in the charter that the progression of chief comes from the deputy chief, but our charter doesn't have a deputy chief position.
Right. Okay. But I agree with you that I don't recall it being in the statutes, but I like to look just to make sure. Okay. So I don't want to just give advice out without first checking. Number two is even if it's not required, if it's something that exists, then the question becomes, is the position, and again, as I sit here, because I don't do the labor, is that position part of a bargaining unit? If the position is part of a bargaining unit, then you can't eliminate the position or change the qualifications of the position without having discussions with the union. So if there were no requirement to have a deputy chief, but the city chose to have a deputy chief 10 years ago, 100 years ago, now you have a deputy chief, and we have to live with whether there be a contract without a union, and you have to wait until the end of that contract to eliminate the position, or if it's part of a bargaining unit, we have to engage the union.
I'm not talking about eliminating it at all. I think what I'm saying is I can't wrap my hands around that we're saying in one section that the deputy chief moves to chief. And in the police department, there's no definition of a deputy chief, is what I'm saying.
So if I may, those are two separate, the two paragraphs address two separate issues. And in the first paragraph, the idea that anyone should automatically move into a position because the position above them has been vacated, unless it's an issue of collective bargaining, I'm disagreeing with that. That would prevent us from finding the best candidate for the senior position because someone else is in a position, and by virtue of having been in that position, it's like the vice president's going to become the president because he was the vice president. That doesn't make sense to me. And we can look back at many vice presidents who we said, thank God they didn't become the president. So I just think that as a matter of statute or law, if in fact it's a part of the collective, if it's not a part of the collective bargaining agreement that this move should happen, then I just want to say I'm against the automatic move up of someone without any kind of opportunity to make sure that we have the best person available at the time in that seat.
And just to that, I would say there's no legal requirement that number two becomes number one. Generally, your deputy chief assumes the role temporarily as the head of the department only in the absence of the chief because they follow a military command. So there always has to be someone in charge. So if the chief is sick, or not able to serve his functions, the deputy chief would remain deputy chief, but serve the functions of chief until either the chief comes back or there's a replacement made. The deputy chief does not, as a matter of contract or a matter of law, need to become the chief.
It does here in Derby. It does. It's stated right
in. That's something to address then.
Yep. It says, it doesn't say, that's why I'm saying it doesn't say deputy chief. It says when a vacancy occurs in the office of chief of police, then the present lieutenant shall automatically become the chief of police, provided said lieutenant possesses the minimum requirements that are listed. I don't have to go through those.
But also, just for clarification, that the position of lieutenant, and there are multiple ones, and there are three lieutenants, those are not in the collective bargaining unit. At a minimum, the person who has the title of deputy chief, that is not a collective bargaining position.
So I don't have a problem with an interim placement to fill so that there's leadership in place right away, but I still have a problem with saying that one of those people has to become the chief. I think that's problematic. I think it blocks us from finding the best possible candidate. If one of them deserves that seat, they'll get that seat because they deserve it, not because they're, you know, sitting waiting for the chief to make a move.
To try to make it a little easier, maybe understandably a little, in Derby, when you're taking a test to be, and it used to be lieutenant, whether they call it deputy chief or not, you're actually taking the chief's exam, because when you get appointed to that position, you're on it. It's in our charter, and I know that Carl, you have a difficulty with that, and I don't care either way, but you're actually, when you take a test to be deputy chief or lieutenant, whichever, you know, that's something that we're questioning, you're actually taking a chief's exam, because according to our charter now, that position automatically rises to the chief of police. And I working there for 32 years, I don't think that is a bad idea. I'm against hiring from the outside, because I think, a person, his home rule is much, much better. I've seen a lot of problems going to the outside, but I'm just one person there.
Well, I think we've seen a lot of problems with people from the inside as well. I think that a person needs to qualify for and outpoint or outperform someone who is equally, there needs to be a competitive position. To say it automatically goes to someone, you know, reeks of a type of nepotism within the department. That's problematic.
Point well taken.
I would think if we make somebody a deputy chief, there should be a requirement as to so many years on the force before they're even qualified to assume that position. So that if they're going to advance to chief, they've already got a solid foundation under them.
According to the police contract, it's 5 years.
Well, that's really not that much.
So then someone that has served for, you know, 10 years, someone mentioned earlier, I can't remember who it was, said that, you know, I was, police officer somewhere else. I served as such and such somewhere else. And then I got transferred here. And I think the detail was the chief had the latitude to make this decision. That means someone else who is very, very qualified, above grade qualified somewhere else, decided to come to Derby because they saw something in Derby that they thought that they liked and that they could contribute to. And I would argue that there might be people who would want to move to Derby or come to Derby to serve that might be more qualified than the person who's sitting in the seat next to them. And what I want is the most qualified person. And I want it to be a transparent process.
All fair points. But I think the bottom line is these have to be collectively bargained with the union. As Attorney Marino said, or we're going to open up the city to a lawsuit. We have to keep that in consideration, based on our time constraints as well.
Yeah, but from lieutenant up is not a collectively bargained position, right?
Lieutenant is in the bargaining unit.
Oh, he is. I thought we said he wasn't.
No, he is.
I think the clerk clarified, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Clerk, that, and again, I don't know as I sit here, I know the chief is not part of a bargaining unit, but I believe the clerk said the lieutenants also were not part.
That's correct. Those positions are not. Those are management positions.
So generally, administrative positions or management positions are generally not part of a bargaining unit because they're managed.
Yes.
So then deputy chief would be a step above lieutenant, correct?
I'm going to say yes.
I would assume so, yes.
Right. So then mm-hmm. It's not a bargaining position.
So it doesn't exist, though. Right. It doesn't exist. The deputy chief is not an existing position.
Right, but it's not something that we would have to run by the union even as a courtesy, because if the lieutenant is not in the bargaining unit, deputy chief is a step above him. He's not in the bargaining unit. We don't need union buy-in.
Well, that's correct. What you could theoretically do is if you have multiple lieutenants, you could eliminate one of your lieutenant positions, make a deputy chief position, because the question is going to be, do you need all those lieutenants plus a deputy chief plus a chief?
Yeah, but that's something I would union. See. You're going to get union pushback because you're eliminating.
You're not part of the union.
Oh, wait.
According to the clerk. So assuming that is correct, and I have no reason to doubt the clerk, they're not part of a union. So you can do what you want with those as long as they're not subject to contracts. If they're subject to contracts, and Mark, you can weigh in on that. I don't believe they are. If they're not, then you can, again, you can advance one to deputy chief, leave the others as lieutenants, and have that order if you want. And deputy chief doesn't automatically become chief. I know what the charter says, but these are things that you should be considering about modifying.
Okay.
So, you know, what it does do is if you take the current group of people that are in place, then what it says is that there is not going to be any diversification of the leadership of the police department if the three lieutenants and the chief now are all of a certain type of person. That means no other type of person could possibly get that job. And I don't think it should be a charter issue. I think it should be a management decision issue, and not a charter issue, because it doesn't. Does it speak to this in the charter right now,
Mr. McCluster? I think you've hit on something that is a valuable point. Your charter is very specific in certain instances, and not in other instances. Most charters do not have, you know, how do you fill a vacancy of the police chief? Normally, that's left to the chief elected official or the town council, which would be your board of aldermen, to approve. When a vacancy occurs in the office of chief of police, the then present lieutenant shall automatically become chief of police, provided that lieutenant possesses a minimum of an associate's degree in criminal justice or related fields as designated by the board of police commissions, and a minimum 5 years in full-time service in a supervisory capacity. That's what your charter says. You could simply recommend that this section 44 be eliminated. And if that be the case, then, you know, your mayor would have the appointment power. You can specifically say that in your charter. So that's up to you. It is somewhat uncommon to be as specific as section 44 is.
I beg your pardon.
It's your community, and you get to propose whatever you feel is appropriate.
I beg your pardon. I'm looking at this collective bargaining agreement that was just approved, and there is it's confusing because the charter was never changed. They created a bunch of positions without changing the charter, and in the collective bargaining the quickest way to look at it was in the pay grade, and there's lieutenant line item in there that was never in there before. They changed the to this deputy chief. So I think we need to, instead of trying to belabor the point, I think you're probably better off to like put this off till the next meeting, and just we can try to get the get some clarification on it, because some of the stuff is just like was not done in compliance with the charter. It was just done. I can't I think it's going to take a little bit of research to try to figure this out, and probably a longer discussion at a future date, probably.
And what I can do is I can speak to Labor Council and try to provide an outline that can be circulated with your next agenda, just addressing this issue. What's in the CBA, what's not in the CBA.
One other quick question. One of the things was to eliminate the supernumerary pool. Does that also have to go to collective? It's crazy not to have it there. There's only two supernumeraries left. And I don't remember how many from a supernumerary pool. I've been out of there for
part of the CBA. Years. I don't believe they're part of the CBA.
Okay.
Yeah. They are, because they're in this section. I just read it. It's like at the, right at the end. They're still in there. It because it talks about the wage rate shall be thus and such. There, it's right there. It's Article 28.
I had an offline conversation, I thought, with the chief. But again, I'm not Labor Council, so let me get an outline on it so that we can make an informed decision.
Okay. We'll push that off until the next meeting.
I think you'll find that with this issue, this could be a whole subject of one Charter Revision Commission go around, just this issue by itself, because there's so many. Yeah. The language is so old, and Sam, is Sam still here? He's the police commissioner. Where'd he go?
He left. He had another meeting to attend, so he just left.
Oh, okay. So I mean, this is a complicated issue, and some of the points that were raised are very strong and valid points that probably need the discernment of time and focus to say, what do we want our police department to look like in the 21st century?
Right, and I would strongly recommend, not rush with this issue, and if you feel it needs more time, maybe postpone it until after this election so you can spend more time on it. Mm-hmm. But you should definitely get input from your police chief, because as you're trying to build a 21st century police department, what is that going to look like?
Right.
And he's in the best position to make the recommendation.
Right.
But I do think at some point we should come back. I mean, it's obviously a lot of information, like Mark said. I do have to agree with that. Something we should at least dabble in once we get everything else, if you want to do that, after we get everything else ironed out, because there is a lot of good points being made, and I hate to see it just get lost in the shuffle.
Okay, so we'll move on, but before we do, Carl, did you have a question for Attorney Marino before we advance to the next item?
There was a question about whether something was a matter of staff. What was the point before that we were covering? Just one sec. Oh, yes. So with the section 29 and the annual amount that's given, supposed to be given to the hospital and to the library association, is it possible that let's say we strike this, and is it possible that the hospital could come back and say, hey, you're supposed to give us $1,000 a year for the last 15 years, you owe us $15,000. So whether it exists and continues to exist, or whether it's stricken here, are we on the hook, potentially, possibly? I don't see the hospital trying to do that. It'd be bad PR for them. Given that they're profitable, but you know, still, is there an exposure there?
As your attorney, I would say, both the Griffin Hospital and Derby Neck Library Association have an interest in receiving that money, and to the extent that there's been a failure of payment, arguably, yes, they can make the claim that you owe me for the last 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years. However, there's also a concept in the law that says, if you sit back on your rights, you don't get to collect. Litigated case once on child support, and someone waited 25 years to claim that they were entitled to child support. And under a theory of latches, the judge said, no, you don't get to go back that far. So, arguably, I don't know when the last time these payments were made, But if they were obligated to be paid, it would probably be back to a reasonable window of time, which might be 5 years, maybe 10 years. But I don't think, to the extent it hasn't been paid in 30 years, that you have to be concerned about having to pay 30 years worth of payments. And I would think that Griffin Hospital would probably be less inclined to become adversarial with the city in this regard. I don't know Derby Neck Library Association. I haven't dealt with them, whether or not, I mean, I would imagine that that association might be more inclined to say, hey, you owe me $500 for X period of time. But again, I can't speak to that because I don't know anything about that association or if it still exists. Mr. Dunn is waving his finger.
No, I, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I was just saying, no, I'm a member of the board of directors of the Library Association. We, if the money comes, it comes. We won't say we rely on it.
And quite frankly, this is a provision that you should probably strike. Why these two charities? Why not
right. The
Boys and Girls Club? Why not, you know, there's a lot of charities that do a lot of good for your community, you know, and this might have been appropriate at the time, but does it remain appropriate in today's day?
Right, right.
And just for the record, it goes back to the time when Mrs. Kellogg and her father founded the library, and it was founded in one of the public schools, the Hawthorne School at the time. So it goes back to that time.
Yeah, and I'm not against either one of them. I just, that whenever I see an open liability like that, I just like to close it and move on from it.
Okay, so we're gonna we'll move on to the next item, which was brought up by Alderman Sill, and the first item was, and we already discussed the changing the terms of the mayor, the board of aldermen, alderwomen, 4 years. So we don't need to rediscuss that. His second point to consider was combining of the tax board with the board of aldermen and alderwomen, running 4 aldermen in each ward instead of the current 3, and have the finance committee consist of 5 to 7 members of the board of aldermen handle the Derby City budget, which in turn would be approved by the full board. So essentially what Mr. Sill is recommending is the elimination of the tax board, increasing the board of aldermen by one member per ward, and having a 5 to 7 member subcommittee of the board of aldermen deal with the city of Derby budget. And then they would in turn bring it to the full board of aldermen for approval. Do we have any thoughts on that item?
One thought, just to have it out there, is I don't have an opinion either way because I haven't studied it enough. But the one thing that concerns me is if you eliminate the tax board and just make it a board of aldermen, we have to have some kind of substance to have minority representation on the board of aldermen. The tax board has minority representation. If it goes all to the tax board, then one party, whether it be Republican or Democrat, has the opportunity to control everything in the city. So just a concern of mine is that somehow if we do that we have to have some sort of avenue for minority representation, whether we make the if we add another alderman from each ward, maybe those aldermen have to be minority representation. But the thing that I'm a little concerned about is that there will be, by eliminating a tax board, there is no minority representation. We have to address that.
And I think that was the point that Ms. Chemist has made during the public hearing earlier this evening. But yeah, it's a point well taken.
And I just wanted, just for those who may be new to the process, when Mr. Stankey's talking about minority representation, he means mandatory minority party representation, so that that would be an automatic thing. And any seats that are at large, that's a requirement of the state statute. Any seats that are like done by ward, that would have to be written into the charter. But if it were seats that were citywide, because one of the options you could also consider is having some of those people run citywide. And if there were a requirement to run citywide, you would have to, you would have to provide for mandatory minority party representation. And the rule on that is that no more than two-thirds from one party could be elected to the spots that are there. So in the case of the tax board, that is why six and four, because it can't be more than two-thirds. And it's the same reason why the Board of Education cannot be more than six from one party. There's none.
Right.
But that would not prevent you. If you put four in each ward, you could require that one of the each of the ones in the ward could be, that no more than three from one party out of the four could be elected from one party.
I have to agree. I think if we're going to alter the, if we're going to eliminate a board or combine boards, I guess would be a better way to describe it, then I definitely think we would need some kind of minority representation. And I know Mr. Sohichi, he said it just has to be four, from three to four. We could also do, since we're combining, you could do three to five if needed as well. This way you're really not losing too many people. It might be a little bit of an easier sell to people.
Yeah, and I believe, Ms. Kirka, you can elaborate on your, you suggested instead of putting, maybe adding a fourth ward. And if you can clarify that, I questioned the, you said change the wards by the number of voters. I don't know that we can change it by the number of voters, but rather the population.
Yes, actually, can you hear me?
Yes.
I unmuted, I think. Actually, section three, I believe, Mark, you said that every 10 years, decennial census, that the ward should be redistricted. I believe Mark said, so we do have to redistrict. That's why I have the question that we now make it four wards, because the third ward is usually the biggest. This way they'll be equally divided, and then it'll be three alders from each ward, so you'll have the 12.
So I'm not sure if you have your phone on.
Right?
You have your phone, or somebody's got their phone and their computer on, so you got to turn one or the other off.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing to keep in mind, there is a statute, 9-167A, that addresses minority representation. And the issue I see that we need to address is how would it play out in the city, because you elect by wards as opposed to by, the city at large. But it provides the maximum number of members of any board, commission, legislative body, et cetera, shall be as follows. And when you have a body of more of nine or more, it's six. It has to be six of the majority and three of the minority at least. And if it's more than nine, it's two-thirds. So, again, you can rely to a statute to address this issue. The only thing we'd have to try to really think about is how do we address it, because you get elected, you're electing by wards.
Right.
It's hard to say. Normally, like in Orange, they have a board of selectmen. The selectmen fall into a pool, and it's the top five vote getters after the first selectman is elected. So, maybe there's a system that we can imagine for Derby in that regard, but it would be somewhat difficult because you have to have representation from each ward.
Right.
That's if you continue to vote by ward.
Well, I'm not going to suggest that, Mark.
No, but all I'm saying is that the ones by ward, there's not a state requirement if you elect by ward.
It's a historical Derby historical thing. And again, most people don't like changing historical things like that. You're absolutely right. I mean, if you're a resident of the town, presumably or the city, you're presumably doing things for the benefit of the city at large and not just for your ward. And if you want to eliminate the wards completely and just have a citywide election, you can do that. And then you simply, it's easy. It's a 9-member board. You could have compliance with 9-167A.
But you could also still put a local requirement on for a minority party seat in the wards. I know that the city of Milford does that. And Hamden, right. Hamden has they have 9 council districts and they have 1 council person in each district, but then they also have councilors at large that run citywide, and that those seats have to be distributed, including the minority representation statute. So there's options for the board if you wanted to combine. You could do that.
Okay.
Yeah, this is an issue where you may get a lot of pushback, and you may not, depending upon what your goals are, you may not want to marry this issue with, for example, a 4-year term, because you may get a lot of pushback from the constituents on changing the way you do things.
Right.
That dramatically.
And if I may, real quickly, I understand that we might get a little pushback, but also, like in a previous topic, you know, I think that we should really take a look at this, because it's time maybe for change a little bit. And if maybe we don't have to make wholesale changes, but something like this represents maybe a significant change in the way the city has been doing things, because we're not in a good way right now. And maybe it's time to mix things up and think out of the box a little bit. And, you know, I think it brings something to the table. So I would like to see maybe at least circle back to this for sure. And adding a 4th ward, I mean, we can always do that instead of just increasing the districts, which either works for everybody. I mean, obviously the 3rd ward would probably be the biggest ward. So that would probably be, you know, the biggest chunk of it would come from the 3rd ward, I would assume. But that's something that could be worked out. I know. But to be fair, redistricting will take, I mean, I know we're not redistricting, we're rewarding, but that will take a lot of time. That's just not something we can just, you know, do in like a couple of days. That's going to take a good amount of time.
Well, but the redistricting is not something that the Charter Revision has to do. The drawing of the lines is provided by statute after the census, and ultimately the Board of Aldermen has to approve that. The only thing the Charter would, this commission would have to worry about is how many wards, and do you want some of the aldermen to run at large if you combine the boards?
Okay, any further discussion?
I would just say that, you know, I don't know that you want to really sort of overload people. I'll double check with folks in Seymour, because they do this on a more regular basis, but there's a whole setup in part of it where you just make sure that you get something through your Board of Aldermen and through the general public, and in order to actually make these things. I would be worried about trying to shove too much and one shot, jeopardizing folks' you know, the ability to get, I think, the big structural change that needs to happen, which is for your, you know, the discussion of mayoral things. So that would just be my 2 cents. Thank you.
Okay, we have go ahead. Somebody else want to speak? Okay. There's 2 additional items for the Charter Revision Commission to review. I'm not sure who they came from. Modify Section 14 regarding the dual office holding. This has to do with no officer of said city shall be at the same time a member of the Board of Aldermen, either mayor, street commissioner, public works, police commissioner, fire commissioner, or any other officer of said city, either elected or appointed, including members of the Board of Aldermen, members of the Board of Apportionment Taxation, Finance Committee, and members of the Board of Education shall directly or indirectly furnish any materials to said city or be directly or indirectly employed to do any work for said city, except in his or her official duty. So if somebody, in other words, this is saying that if somebody works for the city or works for a company that that works for the city, they would need a waiver by the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, a unanimous vote to allow them to serve an elected position. Any thoughts on that?
Didn't they get voted down last time in the charter revision?
I don't recall.
What was proposed last time was to eliminate that section entirely, and that was defeated.
Okay.
So can you explain this one more time? I had terrible service. You broke up on me a little bit. I heard just the very end of what you were trying to say. I apologize.
Sure. This provision is essentially if you are employed by the city of Derby, say a police officer or a public works or a teacher or a coach, and you are an elected official, it would require that's a dual office holding. So you're doing two positions in the city. You would need a unanimous vote by the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, in order to serve.
Gotcha. Talking about the waivers. I'm sorry. Correct. I apologize. Yes. I had very bad service there for a second.
That's right.
Sorry.
Rob, just a suggestion. We're going on 2.5 hours now. Maybe you can email those last two to us so we get a chance to review them.
Yeah, those were emailed today or yesterday rather by Mr. Garfalo. So
not a problem. It's just
okay.
Just we're going on 2.5 hours.
They were in your package from the hard copies of stuff.
Yeah.
That we came up with.
Yeah. All right. So the next item is modify section 55 regarding the makeup of the Board of Assessment and Appeals. So that's section 55. Yeah, hopefully everybody had an opportunity to look at this. Again, like Chuck said, we're running on 2.5 hours here. The president of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, chairperson of the Board of Apportionment Taxation, city treasurer shall constitute the Board of Assessment Appeals and may exercise the same duties and powers that are conferred upon the town city boards by the general statutes as same as may be amended from time to time, except as herein provided. The Board of Assessment Appeals shall not have the authority to reduce any assessment unless the party aggrieved shall make a written request to said board for each such reduction, but nothing herein contained shall prevent the board from raising any assessment or adding thereto any property omitted from the list for the purposes of making just a equitable grand list for said city. I guess that was just to adjust the makeup of that. So currently it's the president of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, chairperson of the tax board, and the city treasurer. So that's just something to look at. Maybe we want to change the makeup of that board. All right. So the next item we just talked about with Camille's suggestion, instead of putting four aldermen in each of the three wards, add a fourth ward. So that's something that we all already discussed. And this concludes the charge from the Board of Aldermen. We also had six members of the public speak tonight. Larry Grussels talked about having a bachelor degree or military service for hiring of police officers, giving residents 5 points for hiring if they live in the city, and lateral moves from other police departments. Karen Temesis suggests that we don't cancel the tax board. We talked about that earlier because it's going to limit the number of people with a voice. Mr. Dunn talked about the web publishing to save approximately $600 per post. We talked about that. Mr. Mayhew encouraged us not to be constrained by time just to get to the ballot. The significant changes that are required data from, require significant data in the community to see how to see how it works. And the mayor for 4 years should be all elected officials, not maybe not just the mayor, and also the salary for the full-time mayor versus part-time. And Tara Heider had mentioned the standard of qualification for a specific position, such as treasurer, public works, parks and rec director, and commensurate with work experience. So is there anything that we want to discuss based on the public input from earlier this evening?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I also I emailed to the commission, as previously stated, there were we did say if anybody wanted to email in their comments.
Yes.
So we did get one comment that I sent them both to both of these to everybody, so you should have it.
I do have it. I have it up on my screen.
And I just want to make sure that it's included for the record, the email from Emery Actor of 18 Lombardi Drive. And then also Alderwoman Kurtica submitted her item on her own. So we'll include both of those as part of the public hearing.
Yes.
If there's no.
And I was going to move to those, to the emails right after the public commentary from earlier tonight, and then I'll move to the
okay,
emails.
And I see that Mr. Actor is on the phone, so he may want to comment.
Correct. Yep. So is there any discussion on the items mentioned earlier from the public hearing? If not, I can move forward to the emails. Okay, the first email was from Mr. Emery Actor of Lombardi Drive. His email was sent to forwarded it to us earlier. To whom it may concern, I'm writing today as a taxpayer and a citizen who would like to see some elements of our city changed and certain elements added to our charter to make the city government run more smoothly with more accountability. There are specifically three elements I believe that need to be addressed. Number one, the town website should be required to carry certain information. Every official, board member, and commission member should have a town email address, and that town email address should be posted next to all individuals' names on the town website. It should be easy, not difficult, to contact our aldermen, members of various commissions, and so forth. So that's the first thing. I'm not sure that would be something that the Charter Commission would necessarily handle. I mean, we can certainly bring that to the Community Relations Subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen and maybe have them look into that. His second item was most importantly, we need to submit all commissions, including and especially the Police Commission, to democratic oversight by having those positions be elected ones instead of appointed positions. The mayor should not be responsible for appointing commission members. Members should be subject to the public accountability through the electoral process. Members of the Police Commission should not represent one demographic and one background or way of thinking. The commission should have representatives from all parts of Derby. And number three, if there's no support for point number two, then the Police Commission must be enlarged or have its makeup changed. People from all walks of life and people who look like the residents of Derby should serve on the Police Commission and all town commissions. If we wish to continue having various commissions be appointed positions, then a matter of the charter, we need to insist on diversity on the town's commissions. There's actually a fourth item in here. A statement and belief for public accountability must be put into practice. It has become the expectation that members of the boards, aldermen, and other public servants respond to constituent correspondences in a timely and professional manner. Currently, that is not the case. Members of the commissions have no public accountability and therefore no incentive or expectation to respond to the public. His email concludes, thank you so much for your consideration of these 4 points. Please consider as you go about your important work, asking yourself, what changes can we make to increase accountability, competence, and responsiveness in our city government? I strongly believe that that should be our primary goal. Sincerely, and Mr. Actor, I see that you're here. If there's anything that you'd like to add or elaborate on, you're more than welcome to at this point.
So thank you all for your work. I would just like to see the Police Commission, especially, be just head of oversight whether the democratic process, if that's something feasible that the commission could consider. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So is there any discussion on that email?
I mean, I spent a little bit of time trying to think about how we could actually, like, what could we physically put in our charter that would, you know, address those issues and you know, in our foundational document. And I it's going to take a little bit more time to try to figure out how exactly. I mean, there's the obvious sort of stuff. We could, you know, work with the police commission and, you know, adjust that in some sort of way. But in terms of like trying to get more more diversity of folks in there, I don't know how we could physically put that in our charter. I think that would be difficult. But I could see an opportunity in looking at the police commission to see if there's something we can do in that respect. That's the only way I could see getting it into the charter somewhere. Mm-hmm. I agree with his points completely, especially with regards to, I did look at our City of Derby website and I did not find any, there's no contact information at all. It just says the names of the different folks, you know? So, but again, to your point, how do you, I don't know if that's something that's for the charter.
But it is a good point, Chris. I have to, I mean, making public officials and commissions more accessible. I mean, we work for the taxpayers, so.
Yeah, just for my own shameless plug, I think just, you know, getting new people into the process, you know, those appointed positions are stepping stones for folks to become, to do a little bit of work for the city and then go on to bigger and better things, to become a Board of Aldermen member or become the mayor or go on to even greater things. And I think that the more opportunity we have for folks and the more diversity of opportunity there is, you know, the better off we all are as a city. So thank you.
So I think we're clearly at a watershed moment, you know, nationally as it relates to things like the police commission particularly. And what I would like to see us do is take the next couple of weeks between now and when we meet again to look and see what's in the atmosphere, what type of options are being presented. There's legislation coming out of the Congress. There's legislation going to come out of the State House. Let's not jump to decide. Let's see what our options are, because there are people who might, well, certainly I'll say for myself, who are smarter than me and have been working on this longer than I have to glean from. So I would encourage everyone to keep their eyes and ears open for things that are happening in other places and things that are coming, if you'll use the term top down, that might be useful. As someone told me once, we can eat the fish and spit out the bones.
That's good advice.
Carl, I agree with you that we have to sit back and watch a little bit what's going on. This is a time we've never seen before. But again, the police commission portion of this is something that's going to expand out, because parts in the charter give specific things that the commission shall make all rules and regulations for the department. And you know, it's something that's going to have to be looked at, because you're not going to want somebody that doesn't know anything about law enforcement in there, you know, to do. I mean, we've got to do a lot of thinking on everything. And just to, you know, when you say all commissions, I'll put on my fire hat now. And the same thing with the fire commission. We have one single fire commissioner. And, you know, you don't want somebody from the general public that knows nothing about firefighting. The City of Derby has the best firefighting force, I believe, in the state of Connecticut. I serve as a state fire commissioner, and I got to tell you, you're getting it for almost free. And to, you know, to do this, and they're all volunteer. They're all volunteer. And we've gone through this COVID pandemic, not unscathed, but let me tell you, you should be very proud of all the firefighters and EMS people you have in town, because we came out on the bottom end. And again, I just dread that if it's an elected position, because somebody can call a lot of votes out or something, that knows nothing about the fire service or nothing about law enforcement, can be in there doing everything. So again, that's just my opinion there. It's something that has to be thought out, and we're under this time constraint. So it's gonna take a lot of hats. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, and the final email came from Alderwoman Kurtica on earlier today. equally divide, and we touched upon this a little bit, equally divide the number of voters in each ward in the fourth ward, so and add a fourth ward so the numbers are reasonable and have three alder folks in each of the four wards. I think that that's pretty much what we touched on earlier. Camille, am I correct? And she's still muted. Okay. All right. Is there any other items moving on to section or item number 8 on our agenda? Are there any other items that the members of the Charter Revision Committee want to bring up themselves that hasn't already been discussed tonight?
We haven't talked about it.
Yeah. No? Okay. Hearing none, our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, June 23rd. So if we can, you know, take our time to pretty much digest what we talked about tonight, take these items, is not necessarily a transcript, but are these ideas going to be put into an email and forwarded to everyone?
Yeah,
well, I know we all took notes, but.
We'll have the minutes transcribed and sent to everybody.
Okay. All right.
Hey,
so,
Rob, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Just a point of information. I didn't get this in before, and it's just about the term limits. So okay. I looked up the average term limits for mayors nationally, and the average is 1 year, 14%, 2 years, 35%, 3 years, 6%, and 4 years, 45%. So just as a point of information, almost 50% of all the cities that have been polled have a mayor's term of four years.
I saw that too, Carl. I you were probably on the same website as I was, the National League of Cities.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, from 2006. And, so I think that kind of will give us a little bit more information going forward is that if we do decide that it's 4 years, that it's actually in the majority as of 2006, so it's something to consider.
Yeah, it's good information. Okay, so if there's nothing else, we if you could just in between now and our next meeting on June 23rd, if we can just digest this information, do our homework, and consider it, and we'll have further discussion at that point and see you know what items we possibly want to move forward on and maybe what items. We can put on the back burner. That's going to take some more time than we have for this.
Question, Rob.
Yeah, go ahead.
The meeting schedule that Mark sent out says that all meetings will be start at 6. My notes say that on Tuesday, the 23rd, we're starting at 8 because of a tax bar. Are we starting at 8 or 6?
Correct. Yeah, I was just about to mention that. That's the one meeting that we are starting at 8 o'clock. The rest of the schedule that he had sent out earlier today, those will all start at 6 o'clock except for our next meeting. Tuesday, June 23rd, will be at 8 p.m.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's unless the tax board is not meeting that night.
If they're not meeting, then we can have it at 6, correct. And we'll make sure that that's, you know, discerned to everybody before then. So, all right. So if there's no other discussion, if I can have a motion for adjournment.
Move with appreciation to the chair for his work tonight.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Nice job.
Thank you.
Well done.